This is May 16th, and this is the Bruins Beat, presented by FanDuel on CLNS Media. And welcome into the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. My name is Evan Marinofsky. Hope you guys are having a great day, a great week. And on this episode, Connor Ryan and I get into Bruce Cassidy heading to the Western Conference Final. And we take a look back at that decision, the pros, the cons to firing him. Did it tell us anything about the Bruins? So we get into all that. And then we also get into some off-season moves, some early looks at potential trade candidates around the league, potential teams that might want some big Bruins, and what those deals might look like. So we get into all of that in today's episode. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Connor Ryan. And we're here with Connor Ryan. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. Although I will say, Connor, Bruins fans must have had a tough time on Sunday because you get the Celtics who go into a game 7 at the Garden, just dominate in the second half. Jason Tatum goes off for, what was it, like 51 points he finished with? I mean, it was just one of those all-time performances that, you know, you're just in awe of. And then you had that, so you get to watch, you know, the other, your Garden counterpart, dominate, go to the conference final against the 8-seed Miami Heat. Another South Florida team, a little scary. And then at night, at 10 p.m., so you had to wait a little while, but at 10 p.m., you got to see the Vegas Golden Knights and Bruce Cassidy punch their ticket to the conference final. And that's where I want to start today. Bruce Cassidy. We discussed Bruce Cassidy for many years when he was head coach of your Boston Bruins. And we knew he would, you know, when he was fired last year, we knew he would end up somewhere quick. Vegas came right in, swooped him up, took him in. And now they're in the conference final. And it's the perfect time to look back at the move the Bruins made with Cassidy. And obviously, and we've discussed this, Cassidy lost the room. He did. He lost the locker room. You know, he was too tough on guys, allegedly, and stuff like that. But looking back, this Bruins front office chose the players over the coach. And I think it's a fair questioning of, did they make the right decision? Because, yes, great regular season, but no postseason success after 1 year. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones you have to apply the hindsight, right, of like, did the Bruins, you know, monumentally collapse in this first round? Absolutely. And I think, you know, obviously Jim Montgomery does not come out looking that great in terms of his decisions out there. You could also make the argument that if Bruce Cassidy's back, what kind of team do you have, right? Like, is, you know, is Jake DeBrusque here? Is David Krejci coming back from the check? Is Bergeron back, right? Like, there's all these other things that you weigh. And it's not to say that over the regular season, just – the Bruins being happy and singing Kumbaya and, you know, singing Bryan Adams in the room. Like, I don't think that was the number one thing that spurred them on this, you know, record setting pace in the regular season. Like you can give credit to, I think, the lineup tweaks in terms of getting more 5-on-5 offense, involving the defense more. It's just when you get to the playoffs, you can kind of toss it all out the door. Right. And, you know, I think you have to give credit to Bruce Cassidy. I think the biggest thing as to why they moved away from was, you know, the fact that most importantly, I think just the messaging was getting stale. Like, I don't think it was just one or two guys in exit interviews being like, yeah, we don't like Bruce Cassidy and that push it. I think that was considered, right? But I think you have to look at the overarching thing of just, you know, even very good coaches after a while, their messaging gets stale. That's, I think, why they decided to move on from and go in a different direction. But yeah, you look at just the way the postseason was handled. It's almost like if you had the same team, the same circumstances, the one thing that was, I think, both a good thing and a bit of a flaw with Cassidy is that, you know, he's a guy that sticks to his guns in terms of what's going right and is willing to change things up if they're not going the right way. So I think you look at like Ullmark in game five or even in game six after the first two periods, probably yanking him out of there.
Gone.
Right? I think that's a coach that you look at also has probably learned from his mistakes, right? You could look at how this series played out and apply to the Bruins in 2021 against the Islanders, right? Where Cassidy kind of stuck to his guns and went with Rask when he was clearly wasn't right. Ended up being Bruins' downfall a little bit in that series, right? So you would imagine that Cassidy would make those same mistakes. Maybe again, that's just kind of the ups and downs that coaches have to go through that maybe Montgomery learns from this. But again, it's so tough to apply just like the looking back, the hindsight, what have you, because you'd think that if Cassidy was with this team this year with the same circumstances, he wouldn't make those same decisions. He wouldn't stick with Ullmark. He would probably go back to his tried and true formulas instead of really switching things up in a game six or seven. But again, would you have that same team at that point if you had Cassidy? So there's a whole bunch of different ways you can kind of view it, but I think what's tough to ignore, Bruins moved on from Bruce Cassidy's, four wins away from getting back to the Stanley Cup final with a good Vegas team, but dealing with some pretty serious injuries. I mean, their goalie situation, if they can get to a Stanley Cup final with the way their goalie core is right now, very impressive. And I think even if the I would imagine even Bruins management, if you look at Bruce Cassidy and yes, his messaging went stale, maybe wasn't doing a good job connecting with the players. I don't think there's any doubt of how good he is as a coach, right? And I think he's proved it so far in his first year with Vegas.
I mean, look at what he's done with Jack Eichel. You're seeing it on the national stage with these games. I mean, Eichel's playing defense. He's back-checking. He's hustling, creating plays out there. You hit the nail on the head with they would not have had the same regular season. Bruins, no doubt, would not have had the same regular season under Cassidy that they did with Montgomery. But as most Bruins fans would say, who cares? Who cares? It didn't matter in the long run anyway. But the bigger thing with these two and with Cassidy is, was it an early sign that I don't want to say they were soft, but you look at the way they just kind of malfunctioned in the playoffs and just not showing up for games and things like that, not showing up for long stretches of big games, throughout the playoffs. Again, I hate using the word soft because they're not soft. These are not soft guys. But was it a sense? Was it an early sense with the Cassidy's messaging getting stale? Which again happens. It completely happens with coaches all across every sport. You're about to see it probably with Doc Rivers in Philadelphia. I know it's crossing sports, but messaging gets stale. But was it an early sign that this team? What? It's hard. Not soft again. Not soft, but just not ready for a postseason run like the one that we thought they would end up having.
I mean, I don't know how else you really can look at it in terms of the failings of this team, right? Listen, Jim Montgomery deserves quite a bit of credit and quite a bit of blame, I guess. Credit, if I guess you were talking, if you're from the Florida Panthers perspective, but a lot of blame for how he handled this series. There's no questioning that, but again, it's not to repeat the usual mantra when it comes to, summing up a season-ending series loss, but falls on the players too. Players have to be the ones that execute out there. And as much as you look at the goaltending taking a step back, the lineup decisions, what have you, players on the ice that have to solve the breakout, have to fight through the physicality, get into the inside ice, execute on plays. Like Jim Montgomery wasn't the one who made Hampus Lindholm loft that puck up into the stands in Florida. You know, there's so many guys that just had
Connor Clifton just
yeah.
Airmailing pucks to the other team.
Yeah, exactly. And so, it's, there's anyone that comes out poorly. And trust me, there's a lot of individual players. There's a lot of, Jim Montgomery that don't look great coming off of this series and what could have been over this playoff run. But just a collective group for the players out there didn't show up, didn't execute. And again, you can look at the regular season. And I think we all talked about this, that even next year, this Bruins team can go out to an 8-1-1 start. I feel like we're all going to be like, okay, that's good. It's more than we expected. That's good. Let's see how it translates to the playoffs, right?
We'll see it. We'll see it in the spring.
It's unfortunate, but you look at this team, and even remains to be seen what this roster looks like when camp opens in September. But still going to have quite a few guys that have been on this team for a long time. I've been through a lot of playoff games, and now like you have that level of, I don't know if doubt's the right word, but you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? You know, it falls on the players executing these situations. And after going on a run all season long, they just didn't execute, didn't show up when the time mattered. And, you know, that's a tough look for a team that you look at how much veteran talent, how much metal, how much, you know, productions are all season long, how focused they are. It was shocking. Like, there's no other way to really put it. It's just every time I think people look back at this season, or you try to get through this offseason, and you wait a couple of days and you think about it some more, and it just, again, baffles your mind. And I feel like it happens every couple of days when you see these other teams that are on the cusp of a conference final. You look at, like, Seattle Kraken, right? Like, you look at all these teams and how the Bruins couldn't execute in those areas in crunch time and the playoffs after being so great all season long. Baffling.
Yeah, baffling is the right word. And again, I still just go back to, you know, as we dissect the season and the postseason and what happened, I do think it is an interesting observation of, hey, you know what? You know, there were a lot, again, messaging went stale, I get it, with Bruce Cassidy. And again, Montgomery, there were some really good changes he implemented this year. I mean, he was not a failure this year. He just had one bad postseason round. It was just a big postseason round to really bring your worst. But I still wonder if there's something to be said there for, you know, the players needing a softer touch, and it just, you know, translating to when the going got tough, they didn't really show up. And, you know, you're going to see it for the rest of the play, you know, for at least four more games in the conference final out West, whoever Vegas ends up playing, whether it's Dallas or Seattle. And good for Cassidy, man. Like, you know, loses his job here, immediately gets picked right up. He loses his dream job here. And I know that, again, there was stuff in the locker room that he was not, you know, he'd run thin with the players, but you still look at the results and all that stuff. And, you know, again, it's hard to, I mean, it worked out during the regular season. It just didn't work out during the playoffs. And I know they're two different coaches, but, you know, I think it's a fair evaluation to make. So picking right back up, Connor, off-season stuff, off-season moves. There's going to be a lot this off-season. There's going to be changes to the roster. How big the changes are, we don't quite know yet. But looking around the league, there are some interesting things going on. Winnipeg's got there, what could be like a fire sale. There's some other areas that Bruins could kind of check in on. And one area I want to start with is Pierre-Luc Dubois. Out in Winnipeg, 24 years old, pending RFA, $6 million. He made this year. He'll be an RFA going into next year. He's a center. Feels like the likely spot is Montreal. That's kind of the scuttlebutt on him, but it's a young center. Definitely would take a little bit to get him. But do you think the Bruins could potentially be in on a guy like that?
I mean, I think it's going to come down to what the cost is going to be, right? And the Bruins don't necessarily have a lot of draft capital to entice a team like Winnipeg that, again, you kind of look at if they're looking to kind of blow up this core and reset, draft capital makes the most sense, right? And I think you look at the assets that the Bruins have, one of the most appealing is probably a goaltender. And they kind of have one right now in, you know, Hellebuck, right? So it's not like they're a team that you look at Edmonton or like the Kings or someone like that could use another goaltender to really push themselves over the top this year. Winnipeg doesn't have that same kind of need that would make it easy for you to facilitate a deal. So are you giving up, you know, a Lysell, a Lauri with a DeBrusk or someone else like that? Like, you probably have to give up quite a few pieces to get a guy like Dubois. And again, I think there's a little bit of concern with Dubois in terms of probably the off-ice stuff, whether it's where he kind of forced himself out in Columbus. Not a great look for a talented player. And again, he's part of that core in Winnipeg that I don't know what goes on up there, but that whole kind of crew does not really have the best track record. That being said, you know, it's the Bruins have brought in a couple of guys before that you know, hear stuff about how they are off ice and they've adjusted very well. You don't hear anything in terms of how they've fit in the room here in Boston. And you look at a guy like Dubois as opposed to maybe other potential trade candidates, right? Like you're looking at like JT Miller, who's 30. You know, he has his own kind of, you hear about him. At least the guy with Dubois is what, 24? 24, 25?
He's right? 24. He is 24.
Yeah. So, I mean, you look at a guy like Dubois, who's 24, maybe doesn't have the high end offensive ceiling as a guy that can, you know, give you 90, 100 points, what have you. But look at the way he plays. It's kind of like the same trajectory as like a guy like Matthew Tkachuk, right? Again, not going to give you 100 points, but you look at how much having a guy who's a pain in the ass to play against, fights inside, you know, bugs the bejesus out of teams in the playoffs. Like having a guy like that in your top six can pay dividends, right? Like, it's, would you rather have, just in terms of playoff, would you rather have maybe a guy that can score a little bit more points and like JT Miller, or would you rather have Dubois, who's going to make an impact in playoff games, right? So in terms of the fit and in terms of what you might need moving forward, Dubois kind of fits in with the plan of the Bruins of, you know, improving or retooling on the fly, right? In terms of, if you get a guy like Dubois and sign him long-term with a core of Pastrnak and Lindholm and McAvoy and ideally Swayman after he's done with an RFA, you've got a framework of a pretty good roster, and that's not even counting a guy like Zacha. You're still going to be contending for a good while. It's a good group to have out there. It's just, I think, going to come down to the price and what you have to give up to get them.
This is the big thing this offseason. It's not so much your needs. It's you don't have a lot to trade. And by the way, we were all in on the Bruins going all in this year, you know, giving up firsts and, yeah, and draft capital and things like that. This is the fallout from it, you know, and you push chips to the table and you did the right thing. The team was the problem. The team didn't show up. The team didn't make use of what you, the talent that the front office put around it. But this is the fallout. And the fallout is, when you want to go for a target like Dubois or Elias Lindholm in Calgary or other pieces around the league that are popular and that other teams want in on, everyone's outbidding you. Unless you put up, you know, like a crazy, you know, offer like that you wouldn't do, you know, like, you know, a top player on your team for Dubois. Like, you're not doing that, I don't think. And so, but if you want to, like, your top prospects are Lysell and Lowry, you know, I don't know how highly those are regarded. You know, they're top prospects for you. I don't know if they're super highly regarded elsewhere around the league. Then you have draft, I mean, you don't have much to trade in terms of draft picks. Like, you're going to start trading, you know, draft picks in like 2055. I mean, it's, you know, like, again, that's what's going to hurt you for a guy like Dubois. Cause you're right. He would fit great. He probably would fit well. This, you know, again, it's not Montreal. Maybe he gets here and immediately is like, I want to go to Montreal. You're going to have to execute a Bruins Habs trade, which would be freaking crazy. But on ice, the fit, you're right. A big guy, annoying to play against, gets to inside ice, things like that. So again, a guy like him would make sense, but it hits at a bigger problem that you just don't have the pieces, which is why you're going to have to do the Pavel Zacha type trade. You're going to have to go kind of off the beaten path, you know, find guys that are outside the framework, like an Austin Matthews as Petrov Maguire. I think Petrov Maguire quoted the old Matthews tweet of, there's always a tweet for everything, of Boston of with the plane emoji. So, I, you know, every time Petrov does that, I'm always like, wait, what? And then I'm like, oh, the tweet's from 2015.
It's going to be a long off season. It's going to be a long summer, Evan.
Very long summer. So, Connor, diving right in, the LA Kings, you mentioned them a little bit earlier. The Edmonton Oilers are another one as well. The Oilers are done. I know some teams were worried about them in the playoffs. Their road ends in six games to Bruce Cassidy and the Vegas Golden Knights. But let's start with the Kings. They're going to need a goalie this offseason. Jonas Korpisalo could be getting high attention from other teams. He's a UFA. After that, they don't really have much in terms of their net, and they're a good team. They're pretty young in certain areas. So like they want to compete. Might be a good spot for a goalie. Might be a good spot for a goalie. And again, hard to trade your Vezina winner, but when you're up against the cap and you have Jeremy Swayman there, who is going to be getting a new contract with this RFA deal, Linus Ullmark makes a lot of sense out there with the LA Kings. And the Kings don't have their first this year, but they do have a first next year. There are some intriguing centers on that team. I don't know. We'd have to kind of get into the nitty gritty of details, but they do have, you know, a Quentin Byfield. They do have Philip Deneau, who, you know, again, Deneau's not really that cheap, but he is a defensive center that kind of would fit, you know, a the kind of the successor to Patrice Bergeron, if you really want to. I mean, you know, not as good, but has the potential type thing. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense in terms of potential trading partner, right? And again, I don't know if you're going to get like a building block center back. Like, I don't think you're getting like Byfield or anything like that. Maybe like Alex Turcotte, who really hasn't hit his stride, even though he was a top five pick, which again, risk reward there of whether it's worth taking on a project like that when he really hasn't.
Another Pavel Zacha.
You know, even, but like, even at like the AHL, he's not producing, which is not great, right? Like, that's the one kind of concern with a guy like him. But at least Vegas makes sense in terms of there's a need there. And even if it's, you know, you're getting a first back and a, you know, are you getting Matt Roy, like a defenseman or what have you back, you could have a situation like that where it makes sense where you move a coveted asset, get draft capital back that you can then, again, maybe use that if you're doing a Dubois deal and you free up some capital along the way. It's one of those situations where I think if you do trade Ullmark, and again, he has to waive his, you know, no movement clause, what have you. Let's say there's like 100 different trade scenarios. You're like Dr. Strange, 100 different trade scenarios involving Linus Ullmark. I feel like 90 of them are going to be returns and people are going to be like, okay, you know, it's kind of more about moving the cap and getting maybe a draft asset back as opposed to like, wow, like you're getting, you know, Dubois and like a second back for Ullmark and Lysel. Like, all Lysel. Right, I see the merit there in terms of why you're moving a guy like that. And again, you're not really in this position where you have to make some tough calls in terms of the cap that, you know, Kings make sense. But in terms of the return, it's going to be, I think, you know, one piece of the puzzle. It's almost like this past offseason for the Bruins where like, we think Bergeron and Krejci are coming back, but the moves, it's tough to really decipher in the moment because you're waiting for the other signings to happen. So I think if Ullmark does get moved this summer, it's going to be one of those situations where it's ideally a part of the puzzle, right? That comes into picture and becomes a little bit more clear as the summer goes on. But yeah, I don't see it. Barring a situation where a team gets really desperate for a goalie, like, I don't view it as something where it's like the Oilers are like, do you want Ryan Nugent-Hopkins? Do you want, like, I don't see any situation.
Want Connor McDavid?
Yes, exactly. Draisaitl. So I don't see that happening. But again, that's not to say that you're going to get fleece in the Ullmark deal, but I think people will have to temper their expectations in terms of how many hockey trades you're going to get and really win if you're moving a guy like Ullmark, where it might be just a building block of what you're trying to do in terms of the greater scheme of things this summer.
The tough part is teams know you're up against the cap. Teams know that you're not trading Ullmark because you want to shake things up. You're trading Ullmark because that's a luxury to have two starting goalies. Same with Taylor Hall, by the way. It's another one that, again, you know, I think Ullmark's value is higher than Hall, I would say, just given his contract and what he can bring, the fact he's coming off of Vezina. But as you said, worrisome that you may not get back what you want. I think what you ultimately want with a Hall trade is cap relief. But it feels like with Ullmark, though, I still am holding out a little hope that they somehow get something legitimate in return, whether that's a first, whether that's a legitimate everyday NHL player who's going to contribute to this team on a regular basis, whether it be the top six or somewhere useful. Like, I still am holding out a little hope that he gets you that back. From a team that is desperate for a goalie. But as you said, like, Deneau is probably a little bit much. That's a building block for them. They went out and literally signed him for Montreal. You know, Byfield's a young, exciting prospect who's already kind of making contributions now to that team. So again, I don't know if it's that, you know, it's not the Joe Thornton trade, hopefully not.
Yes.
You know, and again, Edmonton now, I mean, Edmonton's another one of those teams that was kind of failed by goaltending in the playoffs. So we always wonder, Connor, you know, desperate teams do desperate things. They're now out in the second round for like the 100th year in a row. They have a core there with McDavid and Draisaitl that is only going to get older. In net, Jack Campbell and Stuart Skinner. Yeesh. Yeesh. Not great. You know, does a team like that do something drastic? Again, you're not trading like McDavid or Draisaitl or any of those guys, but, you know, firsts or top prospects. Again, I don't know Edmonton's prospect pool off the top of my head. But is there something there that, you know, a team like Edmonton could kind of jump into the fray and get a lot for a guy like Ullmark? Because if they got Ullmark, That's a huge part of that team that's solidified.
Yeah, no, I think those, I mean, those are the teams you have to target, right? And it just depends on what the return's going to be. I think you kind of said it where I think you even learn, again, different sport. You look at like the Celtics, right? Where if you have a very good core in place, you don't view that as what you have to blow up in terms of, you know, keeping this contention window open. You know, you're not making a shakeup for the sake of doing it. You're shuffling the supporting cast, hoping younger players contribute, what have you, or again, identify another area of need and address it. And that's kind of what you're getting from, you know, if you're the Oilers and you're acquiring a guy like Ullmark, just again, depends on what the return is. Like, do you think you're going to get like a Nugent Hopkins who again had like the quietest 100-point season I think I've ever seen? Or are you getting like a first and Warren Fogle? You know, like that's the thing, right? Like that's
Warren,
I think,
Fogle.
Yeah, like, that's like, you know, are you just getting another like ancillary piece there beyond just a first round pick? So team, that's, you know, a team to watch. Again, I think they're paying Jack Campbell $5 million a year too. So like you're committing pretty much $10 million to your goalies in that situation. You kind of made your bed with him. So, but again, these are the teams that when you look at, they're on the cusp of contention. They've got one fatal flaw that's in net. We'll see just how willing they are to kind of switch things around to facilitate something like that. Because if the Bruins are making a guy like Ullmark available, then you have to imagine a lot of teams will come knocking. Even though, again, we'll see where exactly that no-trade kickers are for the Bruins and Ullmark. Because I have to imagine he's probably not putting places in Canada on his list.
I was
right?
Just but, about so. To say, you'd have no problem dealing him to LA, but I think Edmonton would be a huge holdup in the sense of, you know, is he going to agree to go there? Same with, you know, we mentioned like Elias Lindholm, and I don't know if it's like Taylor Hall for Elias Lindholm. I don't think it's that, but, you know, is Taylor Hall going to agree to Western Canada on that list? I don't think so. But who knows? I mean, it's a, you know, you're contending up in Edmonton still. If you're Ullmark, again, like, and the other thing is, like, if they weren't up against the cap, probably not advocating to trade Linus Ullmark, but you are. They're in a bad situation with the cap, and you don't have, you know, pieces to trade off that are prospects or draft picks that have a heck of a lot of value. So you got to start peeling off the roster, which is not the most fun situation to be in. But alas, here we are. Maybe Chicago will say, you know what? We want a Vezina goalie who has a good contract, and we're going to give you the number one overall pick. Here you go. Have at it. And here's a second round pick as well. Here you go.
Sure. Yep.
So
sure.
Maybe, we'll see that. Maybe that'll be the case.
Okay.
Anyways, no Connor, but we're not going to do the Connor, but what's it going to take to get Connor Bedard? I don't think we're going to ever do that this offseason unless it gets real. Then that's crazy if that actually got like that happened, but I don't think there's any way Chicago trades that pick to anybody. Because they're not, it's not like they were the, you know, and the Bruins didn't do this in 2011 or 2010, they took Sagan, but it's not like they're a team that's contending. That's like, hey, let's deal this number one pick for a ton of franchise pieces. They suck. They're garbage. Like they are at level one. So there is no way they trade that pick. I don't think.
No, they will not.
No, there's no way that pick gets traded ever. But anyways, Connor, what can people look forward to from you over at Boston.com and Boston Globe?
Yeah, we're going to have you covered every step of the way this offseason. We already got our critical dates for the summer, so we know when Def Camp's going to be, training camp, all that stuff, the draft, free agency. So we'll have you covered with everything that happens over what should be a very eventful offseason for the Bruins over at Boston.com. So please read us over there. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at ConnorRyan_93.
Go do all that, and remember to subscribe to New England Hockey Journal. That's Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky. You Bruins Beat listeners, have a great rest of your week.